Following Dr. Konza, we may say that in the Diamond Sutra, the Buddha establishes the doctrine or the teaching, or the realization rather, of selflessness or emptiness in an ontological, a psychological, and a logical perspective. So let us take each one of these in turn. Ontologically, the doctrine of selflessness or emptiness means that no such thing as a separate entity exists. There's nothing which is really and truly and absolutely separate and itself. In pre-Mahayana Buddhist thought, the alleged separate real entities were technically known as dharmas. And we therefore have the Mahayana counter-teaching, as we may call it, of sarva dharma shunyata, or all dharmas are empty. And this means, or this statement means, that separate entities do not really exist. Habitually, of course, we chop reality up into bits. We split it up. We divide it. We distinguish one thing from another. This is this, that is that. Then we start preferring this to that, liking this more than that, choosing this rather than that, sticking to this and not to that. But this, according not only to the Dharma Sutra but to the whole Buddhist tradition, is wrong. One should try instead to see things not exactly as one. You don't reduce all difference to unity, blotting out the difference. But one should try to see things as sort of somehow interfused. In this connection, there's the very beautiful simile of the Gandavyuha Sutra of the intersecting beams of light. It's said that in reality, things are like beams of light that mutually intersect. You've got beams of light, as it were, flashing in all directions, shining all directions. Beams of light of different colours, red light, blue light, green light, yellow light, a ray of this colour, a beam of that colour, in all directions, crossing and crisscrossing. Now, what happens? One ray of light, one beam of light, does not obstruct any of the others. They all shine through one another. They're not lost or merged in one great light. No, they all maintain, as it were, their separate individualities. But their separate individualities offer no obstruction to interpenetration by other individualities, so that they're all mutually interpenetrating. So we should see things, we should see reality like that, not chopped up, as it were, into mutually exclusive bits, but see all things as interfusing and interpenetrating one another, with neither individuality final nor unity final, but both there, without obstruction to each other, at the same time. Now, the fact that separate entities do not really exist also negates the traditional categories of Buddhist thought. Buddhist thought uses various terms. It speaks, say, of the Buddha, the Bodhisattva, merit, wisdom, and so on. But the sutra says one should not think that these terms refer to any fixed or absolute or final entities. All these terms which Buddhism itself uses are just devices or upayas to help us on our way. They have a provisional value only, not an ultimate value, not an absolute value. And this, of course, brings us right back to the famous parable of the raft, in which the Dharma, the teaching, is compared to a raft. It's something to carry you across to the other shore and then to be abandoned. It also brings us back to Zen. There's a story, some of you no doubt know it, that a disciple asked a Zen master, "If I met the Buddha, what should I do?" No doubt the disciple thought the master would say, "Well, you should bow down and worship him." But the master said, "If you meet the Buddha, kill him." So what does this mean? It means if you're really set on enlightenment, on Buddhahood, as we call it, don't let even the concept of Buddha stand between you and enlightenment. We might even go so far as to say there's nothing which stands between people and realization of reality so much as religion, because it's meant to help them, and then they get stuck in the helps and don't go beyond. So there's nothing which hinders you so much in your search for reality as those things that help you. So Buddhism is probably unique in seeing this so clearly, and trying to sweep out of the way, to clear the path leading to enlightenment, even of Buddhism itself. No doubt you need Buddhism for a long time. You need your prayers and your meditations and your scriptures and your chanting, and you need even your social gatherings and your retreats, and you need to use Buddhist terms and Buddhist ideas and to think Buddhistically, but in the end you have to go beyond it all. In the end you have to sweep it all aside and just be left, as it were, on your own, without even Buddhism to guide you and to help you, before you can fully encounter reality. So this is just another aspect of this ontological application of the doctrine of selflessness or emptiness or shunyata. Now, psychologically, the doctrine of selflessness means that we should not be attached anywhere, should not stand or settle down anywhere, should not depend on anything, should not lean on anything or take anything as a support. Because after all, if entities do not really exist, there's nothing for us to depend on anyway. But it's very hard for us to realize this. We nearly all the time want to depend on something, settle down somewhere, anywhere. So often you hear people say, especially later on in life, I'd like to settle down. It's not just material, it's psychological, it's even spiritual. They want to find some cozy corner, some little nest, where they can be all warm and secure and safe. Well, here I am, nothing can shake me. Just like a little bird in its nest on a bough, thinking, well, this is actually fixed. But of course it isn't quite like this. It isn't possible. But sooner or later, secure as we fancy ourselves, safe as we fancy ourselves, our supports are rudely pulled out from underneath us, and then of course we have to suffer. So the Dhamma Sutra says, or suggests, that we develop an attitude which is detached, which doesn't settle down anywhere, which doesn't try to establish itself anywhere, which is free, which is, as it were, flowing, which is completely spontaneous. Not spontaneous in the sense of impulsive or irresponsible. It should be a sort of spiritual spontaneity arising out of, freely and creatively arising out of, a realization of the truth of selflessness and emptiness. Now, thirdly and lastly, logically, the doctrine of selflessness means that rational thought is transcended. The basis of traditional logic, we may say, both in the West and in the East, is the law of contradiction, that a thing cannot be both A and not A at the same time, in the same sense. It can't be both, say, black and not black at the same time. But the sutra says, oh yes, it can. The sutra says a thing is itself, it is what it is because it is not itself, it is not what it is. It is A because it is not, because it is not A. It is A because it is not A. In other words, according to the sutra, logic is abrogated. Reason breaks down. Not that reason is of no use at all. It's very useful indeed in the affairs of everyday life. But it's of no use at all where ultimate reality is concerned. If we want to soar in the void, if we want to wing our way through the void, we must leave reason, leave logic far behind. And this is not easy to accept. It's even easy to misunderstand. There's no question of submerging. There's no question of a descent into irrationality. We must rise above reason, above logic, not fall, not sink below it. And only then will transcendental wisdom develop. Only then shall we really apprehend the message of the Diamond Sutra.